is Bonnie.
Hello, Bonnie. Welcome. Recording going
yeah,
on?
We're fine.
So I have to...
We decided you wanted the gavel today.
Yeah. You said I had to gavel them all in here. Is that what you told me before? So I guess we're going to convene the Minnesota Electronic Real Estate Recording Commission meeting here on the 21st of October. And I see that we have a quorum here today, so that's good. And we have a few folks in the audience as well, so that's good. And we've got at least three that I know of on the telephone with us. So welcome, all of you. Let's take the first item is to just review the agenda. Anybody have anything else that they'd like to add to the agenda and comments? Why don't we go on then? Hearing no comments or additions, everybody okay to move forward with the agenda item? All right, why don't we do that? Next item then would be the approval of minutes from both our September 9th meeting and our July 22nd meeting. The July 22nd meeting was taken up when we met last... Somebody turn on the lights, or did
no,
I just...
No, this one keeps going on.
Okay. Oh, Rob came in. That must have been. The lights all came out when Rob came in.
Power drain momentarily.
Personality, right?
Anyway, we did not have a quorum at last month's meeting, so we were not able to formally approve the minutes of the July meeting. So the members that were here, we did review the minutes, and we thought that they were accurate and correct. But I would be more than willing to take a couple minutes if anybody here wanted to take a little more time to look at those. And then I'd be more than willing to consider a motion.
So moved?
For the July and September, or just...
Fine with me.
With both. All right, it's been moved. Do I hear a second to approve minutes from the two meetings?
No, second.
And it's been seconded by Kay. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes from the last two meetings have been approved. Thank you very much. Then let's go on to item number four on the agenda, which is the ECRV update and e-recording use of the ECRV. And we are fortunate again to have with us today Jason Parker again for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And Jason has... let's see, he's made about a 25% of a full career on the project of electronic real estate certificates of title.
Last I checked, I have a lot more for retirement to go yet.
He's not at the rule of 90 yet, so he's still going to have to wait a little longer. But I thought I talked with Jason this week, and things have been moving along, and I thought maybe he can just share with all of us a little update on how things have moved so far and how many people are using it, and maybe what plans are to move forward here. So, Jason, I'll just ask you to share with all of us a little bit.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair and everyone. We went to production for the e-recording use of ECRV on September 24th, so that was Friday. There was about a week and a half delay because of other projects that were going on inside of revenue and resources couldn't get to it, but it has been uneventful in terms of issues and problems that have arisen through that process. However, I can't really tell you how many submissions have been done through that because it happens, you know, through the county, and revenue doesn't monitor that use. So the counties can report maybe on any e-recordings that they've received through that process. However, I can say that you know, we went to production with the initial three counties of Lyon and Martin and Clay, and subsequently we got registrations from Anoka and Polk County as well. So currently we've got five counties that are in production with the e-recording use. And I would like to see more sign up because I know we have about 29 or so counties that are eligible to receive e-recording packets. It would be nice to see that more of those counties do sign up. So along those lines, I was in contact with Mike about sending out a letter via the ERERC to those counties on behalf of revenue to sort of remind them about what's going on with the e-recording use, how the process works, where to go to register, and I think Mike was going to send that out very shortly here, and hopefully we can get some counties that are active in that regard. So I would guess the usage is lower than we initially anticipated, but we're just getting underway. If we can get enough counties on board in terms of at least awareness, because it's the awareness issue that I'm most worried about, then maybe we can even make the front-end form a viable alternative for any CRV submission to any county. Even short, that would mean that the person using the form would still have to save the PDF and print it out and bring it into the county, but at least they could use the front-end form with the added benefit of the private data has been dealt with. But the issue there is just making sure that all counties are fully aware of that so that they just don't get blindsided by having these forms show up and they're not prepared. So part of the step of getting there, I think, is to get as many of the e-recording counties that at least are eligible, signed up and ready to go, because that would be, a good chunk of counties, and the rest of them then we could take another step and try to do some additional awareness building, and then we can get to that form. In terms of the development efforts that are going inside revenue, there's the state use of ECRV is going into production very, very shortly, and there's been some improvements then work already in place using the new resources that we have, and so Jim's team has made some significant progress on that. So I think we're on target to being able to sort of go to counties in general and really try to drum up full adoption of ECRV in the first half, the latter part of the first half of next year, second quarter of next year. I think we'll be in a position to really do that. And as such, we'll be speaking along those lines at the MACO conference in January, and then we'll be giving a seminar in the MAAO conference in May as well. And that seminar will really try to get counties on board. That is my
Jason. Could you clarify for us what you mean by the work that will go on in the second quarter? Is this the ability for counties to either upload data into the state's electronic system or download data electronically down to the county systems?
At this point, I don't have the specific on that feature and when that feature may or may not be available very specifically, but what I can say is that the
we don't like hearing may not be, Jason.
I don't have
a nod in there that I picked up on real quickly here. But
I don't have the timeline piece that's going to be reported. The last steering team meeting was canceled this last Monday because of special session. And there's going to be another one on November 1, and the timeline is being presented at that. So okay. That information to your question, I hope, will be in that one. And I'm not the one doing that setup, so I really just can't answer that specific question.
Second.
But the other part of your question I can answer, and that is that the infrastructure work that's being done so that revenue feels confident about being able to add any county that wants to go ahead with the tool set will be in place in that time frame.
Okay, because that was going to be my follow-up, and that's creating that SQL database that you're going to be using now for this product?
Right.
And that you feel that will be, A, more stable, and B, more supportable for the department?
Correct.
And you think that will be done by second quarter of next year?
Yes.
Okay. And then my third follow-up on it would be, are you then thinking at that point of opening it up to all counties to use, whether you're electronically recording or not, the electronic CRV?
It's still going to be at a county pace, but what we...
But counties could make the decision when they're ready to come online then?
Decision. I mean, there will have to be, if 20 counties wanted to start on this particular month, we may have to sort of split them out in order to be able to support them.
Okay.
But that's more of a logistics issue, not a technology issue. So, but that is what we're saying is that, you know, from an application and a technology infrastructure basis, we'll be able to bring on any county that wants to come on. There may be some extenuating circumstances on a particular feature here or there, like the one you mentioned, for some counties for which that feature may be extremely important, and we'll have to address those, you know, one at a time.
When it became available, would it then be possible for the county to be able to go online to look at the CRV that's been submitted?
Yes.
It would be.
That would be, that is what we're talking about, is the full ECRV use.
Okay.
Because any county can register right now for the e-recording use. That is already in place. Any county can register for that. Any county can start using that.
Okay. Bill, you had your hand up. I know you had a question.
Thank you, Mike. Mr. Chair, I wonder if it would be, I know it would be of value for the counties that TriMin represents in terms of electronic recording, to receive something, perhaps in writing, from the EIRC that states what Jason is asking, in a sentence or two or whatever, because we've got a user group meeting coming up the 8th and 9th of November. And, you know, while I think we have credibility with our customers, if I could read something that said, here's where we are with ECRV, and this is what the Department of Revenue would like us to do and get signed up for at this point, I think that would carry, and it bore the signature of the chair of this committee. I think it would help a lot to move the rock along. Could I ask the committee to...
Let me just follow up on what you're asking and what Jason alluded to. Jason and I have been in discussion about that very type of letter, and Jason has furnished to me a portion of it that will come basically from the Department of Revenue on what they're looking for.
Great.
And we're going to send it out to all auditor, treasurers, and recorders throughout the state, encouraging them to get ready to do electronic recording if they're not ready, and for those that have already signed up with us, informing them to go online and sign up with the Department of Revenue, because they do need to do that to do deeds with the ECRV.
Right.
And, you know, I can see to it that when that letter goes out, we could find a way to get it to all of our trusted partners as well, Bill, so that, you know, you and all the vendors and so forth would have it. But it's really kind of geared towards the government side.
Sure, that's fine.
To get them to know, A, where we're at, and to get them to sign up with Revenue at that point.
Right.
And
any idea when that will be forthcoming?
That will be out by the first part of next week. By Monday, the end of Monday next week, it'll be out.
Wonderful.
Yep. And Jason has already done his piece of it, and he's done it very nicely, and thank you, Jason. And Revenue has been very good on that. And yours truly is the one reason why it's not out yet. So that's kind of where we're at on that. But that will be out by Monday.
Great. Thank you.
And as a reminder, one piece that Revenue asks in there is to remind the counties to remind their submitters to be registering also.
Right.
And so that's just
that's
another
come from them.
Right.
Another reminder for everyone here that try to get your submitters to register. Because we've only received about 6 registrations on the submitter side, give or take 1 or 2.
Wow.
So
okay. That would be very helpful, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Any other questions for Jason? Well, we thank you for the update, and we bid you keep up the good work and keep the ball moving down the field here. Yes, Marty?
Sorry, you asked if there are any questions, and I'd be able to respond immediately. Jason, do you know if you mentioned Lyon, Martin, Clay, and then Anoka and Pope just recently?
Yes.
Do you have others that you expect to, like, in day now?
When they send me an email that has a registration, I will respond immediately saying, you're good to go. So have I gotten any, you know, statements that they may come on board? No, other than, you know, Hennepin would like to do this, but they're not sure that they're exactly ready. Other than that, we really haven't gotten any, you know, indication from any other counties whether they're going to be, you know, signing up or not. So at this point, I really believe it's an awareness issue.
Let me ask a question. I wasn't planning to get into this, but you raise an issue, and I do have two vendors here, or two submitters, I should say, that are here that have a substantial interest in this from a client standpoint. One of the things that we're looking at in Hennepin is that with the CRV needing to be downloaded into a PDF and submitted to us, the way we've built our electronic system is, of course, based on the standard that we've set as a commission. And that was done before the PDF component was thrown in. And in order for us to accept an attachment or a PDF, and again, my vendor is telling me that you didn't set a standard for this, and I said, no, we didn't, because we knew this was a workaround time, and it wasn't going to be in existence very long. It's going to cost us some money to be able to set something up to be able to receive an electronic PDF, because in the final standard that you all remember we've set, there will not be a CRV electronic document attached. There will only be the electronic number given by revenue to the customer, and that will be on the electronic submission and on the deed that comes into us. And then we, the county, will go into that state system to hit it. And I'm at the point where, at least in Hennepin, if the state's going to have that ready and available, say, by quarter two of next year, I'm having a hard time justifying an expense for the next couple of months to develop something to receive the PDFs and test it and then use it for a couple of months, which I assume will be sparsely used during the winter months because deeds don't tend to be the predominant document that's coming in nowadays, at least not into my office. It's mortgages, satisfactions, assignments, releases, and foreclosure documents, unfortunately. But that's what we're seeing right now for the most part. And I guess my question... Oops. Forgot to shut off my... My question for two of the customers is, what problems does that create for you if Hennepin isn't able to do deeds until second quarter of next year? But what if Hennepin was able to do mortgages and the other documents, but not deeds associated with CRVs?
I would say, Mike, that we'd like you to see you come on board as soon as possible with whatever documents. If we have to wait another 6 months for the CRV process, so be it. But if we could at least be able to submit packages of mortgages, satisfactions, assignments, et cetera, those documents, that would help our load considerably. The one issue that as a commercial office that we have is that even some of those packages are not going to be submittable simply because of the limitation we have
on the doc types at this point. Yeah.
That's a serious impediment for us in any county right now that is e-recording, even in Minnesota. We just can't do the document types we can in North Dakota or Iowa, Wisconsin, etc.
Okay.
On the residential side, any steps that we take towards getting there, even if it's gradual, I think is a benefit to all of us. I mean, we wouldn't ourselves have been able to go full blown everything all at once, even if this had been done months ago. But the fact that we have started in some counties and doing what documents we can in those counties is a benefit. Right now, it's a refinance market.
Right.
And so even mortgages and sats would still be real beneficial to us in the county with the largest volume for us to get our staffs accustomed to the process and getting them to understand that this is routine now, this isn't new and different, this is the way we're going to be doing it. It'll be an easier transition to deeds once those become available too. So whatever steps can be taken in the meantime, and I'd rather start with some of it now and pick up the rest of it later if we could.
Thank you both very much. Your answers are very helpful, as always, very informative. And I think I beg the indulgence of the rest of the commission members on a question that I guess maybe was more directed at my own county, but maybe has some bearing in terms of what we all need to be thinking about.
Well,
thank
it does
you.
Affect the rest of us, too.
Well, but what we've said has a bearing in any markets that we're doing business
right,
with.
Right, I understand.
If Washington were here, I'd be saying the same thing to Jennifer, too. And get the rest of it up, and if it takes another quarter to get deeds, then that's fine.
I hear you.
Yes, and maybe just a point of clarification with Jason, if I may. I'm not sure I quite caught opening up the timeline in opening up the parallel PDF process for the CRV statewide, regardless of whether or not you're submitting electronically. What was the time frame?
Well, I don't have a time frame for that. It's really based on awareness, and our county is going to be prepared for it.
So as a submitter, if I contact a county where I have a package where I would like to submit electronically or even paper-wise, and if I call them previous to that submission, make them aware of what I'm going to attempt to do, and they're okay with it, the DOR should be all right with that as
Not yet. Because what's happening is that then the county has to go, wait a minute, you know, DOR hasn't told us yet that that's okay. And so the first part of that is if it's an e-recording packet to a county that can do then the answer is yes, contact the county and tell them to register with us. Then I know that they are aware of what the process is and how to work it, and that it's an interim process to get to the full CRV, and we can get them listed in the pull-down menu. The county's not listed in the pull-down menu as a county of sale until they're registered. So any other county that's a non-e-recording county, that same problem exists. So in order to open it up for the entire state, we need to make sure that all the counties have a very clean and even piece. And you know, we don't want to try to just go too fast where it's just causing mass confusion. So right now we're trying to, you know, let people know about the e-recording piece. So let's get as many of those counties on board, because that's a significant chunk of those counties. Then we can make sure that we have the awareness built up on the remaining counties. And there's, you know, counties will talk amongst themselves as well. And the quicker that happens, the happier we are too, because it will lower the incidence of having to deal with the paper form, which is different than the ECRV form. So one of the features that may cause problems for counties with high volume is the issue of proxy, where they are still receiving a significant number of paper forms, and they don't want to enter those in a separate process to the ECRV receipts that they get. They would like to be able to maybe, you know, proxy enter the paper ones. Well, the issue there is that those forms are significantly different. So writing the proxy version of the app is actually a significant effort in order to mimic a form that's supposed to go away. So this idea of being able to open up at least the front end piece, even for counties that aren't coming on board for full ECRV, can help us get into that mode as quickly as possible. So that would be a win for everyone involved. But I think it's just we have to not try to have it happen so fast that people are just confused and unaware. And so I think, you know, the first step here is let's try to get all these 29 counties at least aware of the process and registered and on board that way. And then we can take the awareness to the next step. And, you know, I think the MACO step in January will be one place that we can maybe try to move in that direction, make a statement that we're moving in that direction. But it really is dictated on how fast the e-recording piece comes. If the awareness in the e-recording piece is slow, well, then that just demonstrates that the awareness this process is just going to be a slow process. Because everyone is busy.
Rob, if I can add that I think the issue gets to be, for some of us, once upon a time, we thought that the ECRV would come before we ended up doing electronic recording of deeds. And that's kind of gotten flip-flopped here as a result of time and efforts and that type of thing. What I'm hearing from Jason is that they probably will have the technical ability to open it up for all recording, probably sooner than all the counties are going to be ready to start doing, receiving ECRVs for all types of submissions. And I think that's the issue that will probably take place at the MACO conference in January in terms of the education and information that needs to be shared with assessors and auditor treasurers throughout the state, that this tool is now going to become available maybe in second quarter of next year, and then provide a vehicle for those counties to begin to sign up to start saying to you submitters, okay, we're now prepared. Maybe some of us were already doing electronic document recording with it, but we're now prepared to take it, even if you're recording paper documents, to do an ECRV. And that will be the communication that I think Jason's talking about, that needs to be plotted out on the government side. For all of you in the private sector, I think it's a simple fact. It's ready, and now here are the counties that you can use it for. And right now we're just saying, well, it's ready for those counties that are signed up to do just electronic recording. Chris?
There's one other issue to tie back into the ATs. It has to do with collection of fees and trying to get ACH polls and trying to get mortgage and deed registry tax, and that's where my struggle is. So trying to encourage them to figure that out so we can sign up with Jason would be really a strong push from this commission too, I think, that we need to encourage them to help us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hear you. Yes, Rob.
Just a follow-up question then. Say I am working with a project that involves a number of sites in the same county or adjacent counties, and they're not yet on the registry list for the ECRV. Is there someone that I can direct the county that I may be dealing with in that situation to inquire about registration, what they need to do and get set up so that we could facilitate electronic recording in that situation, whether it be contacting someone on the commission or Jason directly? I'm not quite sure. I would like to at least...
If it's one of the 29 counties that are electronic recording, all they have to do is go online with this Department of Revenue on a website that will have a link on that memo that I'll be sending out to them on Monday, and then they just go and sign up right then and there.
Correct. And in the memo is also the email, which is ecrv.support@state.mn.us.
Which you all can go out and look at as well, right, on the submitter side. It's the same site, basically. Yes. And if you dealt with a county that maybe didn't know about it, or they don't read their mail, or somehow they've just forgotten to or put it aside, I mean, you can even help them with that. So you'd be a tool to help with that education process that would be probably appreciated by all of us, too. Yep, yep.
Along the lines of making the full adoption, at least the front-end portion, quicker, if it... at MACO January 13th, I believe, if I was able to say at that we've got 20 counties signed up for the e-recording use of ECRV, and they've been signed up for a month, that's a big statement to get the other counties' awareness going. Whereas I can only say that we've got 10, that means that the process of, it's going to be harder for us to say, yes, by such and such a date, we're going to make the whole front end available. See what I'm saying? So this awareness process is something that we should really try to hit hard here in the next month and a half.
Maybe we could contact those counties and just kindly suggest them to get moving on this. I mean, it might happen faster if we just ask them, you know, what's the holdup, what's the concern, and we could send it in an email of, you know, 29, it's not that difficult.
Right.
Well, we've got the first email going first. I mean, yep. We've got
right.
that one.
And then the follow-up can come here
and
next month.
I will keep you in the loop on, yep. you know, the submissions that I've gotten. And if it seems to be lagging, then maybe we can do more follow-up.
Well, we could just call them up and just say, yeah. hey, what's the issue? Or, you know, maybe we want to know what the issue is, too, because maybe there's some reason that we haven't thought of that. It is a hold up, you know.
What would be helpful for me is to receive a list of contacts for those 29 because I do not have anyone to call. I don't know who to call. So that would be
great. As part of that list and part of that push to educate, it would be excellent if you would also push for full documents that have been approved by the ERER. There's still, I think, a faulty misnomer that you have to go slow, you have to ease into this carefully. You don't. The work that's been done with the standard conveyancing links by Chris and Larry, the work that's been done by the Trimans and the Fiddlers and the CSAs of the world to ensure that's happening on that side and what's been proven in other states. I was just at a submitter this morning. They're an organization that has 33 branch offices across all of Minnesota. Got very excited about e-recording and pulled up some counties and saw the one or two document types that were available to the county. That enthusiasm for e-recording went away really fast.
Okay.
So I would tag on to that. Please push for what's already been approved.
So maybe we need to attach again to the communique the 11 doc types with the 63 documents that are already approved, and we'll be talking about some more here this afternoon that we're talking about adding on, but yeah, okay.
Thank you. That would be very appropriate, and it would be seen as the purpose of the ERER to standardize and to promote e-recording across the state.
Right.
Mike, this is Bonnie.
All right, go ahead, Bonnie, and then Marty. Yes, Bonnie.
I have a couple of comments, but maybe one needs to be held off. One has to do with the ECRVs, and then another one has to do with doc types.
Why don't we take the ECRV one now?
Okay. The ECRV, if I have a deed submitted to me with an ECRV and everything looks I don't necessarily know who the end submitter is, so I don't know whether they're approved or not. So I feel that I am going to have to accept that, and I just want to make sure that ERERC is in approval of that or, you know, what their suggestions are. Because I kind of feel like my hands are tied. If something's submitted and it's all in recordable form, I feel I need to record it.
Well, the people that should be submitting to you need to be signed up as trusted submitters.
Yes, and the vendors, you know, I'm getting them from... I can get... Okay, let's, for example, say I get a deed from Simplifile.
Okay.
Well, I don't necessarily know who the end submitter is or if they've been approved in another county by DOR.
And who is the submitter? Simplifile?
It could be Simplifile. It could be any one of the vendors. It doesn't really make any difference because they have a whole bunch of customers, and I have no way of knowing what customers have been approved by DOR and which ones haven't. And I guess my point is if the deed comes in and it has the appropriate requirements, the ECRV is there, you know, DOR could have approved this party in another county, you know, say with Martin County, maybe it's a local business with Martin County or something. I don't have any way to know that, and I guess I don't know if I have a statute or anything that says that I have to have approval from DOR before I could accept that. I feel like I'm just kind of between a rock and a hard place.
Well, let's let Jason address it here for you, Bonnie.
Thank you for that that note, Bonnie. I mean, the short answer is that any submitter that is registered statewide in one registration. So it's not county by county. It's statewide.
Right.
And it's there for awareness purposes. So you should not feel concerned about going ahead and accepting that, whether they're actually registered or not. The registration process is simply to try to make sure that we can contact submitters if there is an issue or some kind of problem, particularly early in this process. And so that we can know who they are, and so that registrars are understanding how the process works. So if one or two happen to be doing that, so be it. You can certainly send an email to support, just saying, hey, I accepted one, and I'm not sure that they're registered, and with their contact information. And I would take it from there to say, thank you for submitting to Clay County. I noted that you aren't a registered submitter. Please register for future submissions. That's the way I would handle that.
Jason,
thank you very much. That sounds like a good plan.
Jason, do you have on your website, and I've not looked at this, a list of submitters that have registered? Should that be there? I'm just asking. I don't know.
Let me think about it. I do have the list of the counties. I don't want people to get hung up on feeling like it's it's somehow a bad thing.
Okay.
So by posting it on the website, that may make it a little bit more formal than really it ought to be. But certainly I'll consider it because I would like to have the registration process go away. So that's another way of saying this.
Okay.
Is that again, if we can get those 20 counties on board for the e-recording piece, then at that point, I might say, we don't need to register submitters anymore. We've got enough awareness going on that's just not needed.
Mike?
Yes, Bonnie?
My concern about having that particular list on any website would be that some county or somebody somewhere might misunderstand and go ahead and reject the document that is in recordable form. So I think that could be a little bit dangerous that somebody might misunderstand the purpose of the list.
I agree with you completely. I like Jason's whole approach on it. I think that's a lot of sense. I thought to myself when they wanted people to register that, we're making it more onerous, but I understand why they want to start off that way. But I think the approach of not making it public is the best way to go, because then you use your discretion whether it's a recordable document then.
Right, and the other concern about a list would be, it would be almost impossible for Jason to keep it up to date, because he's not there every minute of every day.
Well, at the rate of submission so far, that would not be an issue.
No. Bonnie, on other document types, why don't you hold on that question then, and we'll get to that here shortly on the agenda.
Sure.
Okay.
Since Simplify was used as an example,
yes.
I do want to reassure everyone so everyone understands that when you sign up, when a submitter signs up to use the system, they sign a memorandum of understanding that they promise to abide by all of the rules and regulations of the state. And so that's in place already. And they can't e-record with us unless they do. So that we're wanting to do that and reinforce what all the rules and regulations are as well. And then, as Bonnie's just pointed out, every county recorder still has rejectability, if that's a word, on any document as well. But we don't have a PayPal system. You can't anonymously sign up over the Internet. I mean, this is tried, true, and they have to cooperate with us with the payment accounts of ACH. So it's... just wanted to add that by way of
information. Thank you, Dallin. Marty?
You had, Jason, I think, mentioned earlier, and Bill alluded to it also, the MACO meeting in January, encouraging other counties to get on board, if there would be of any benefit to have customers that are regularly using it to end up saying how slick it is and how great it works for both us and the counties, at least from our perspective, and encourage counties to get on board if you needed needed somebody to be at the meeting.
I just heard a volunteer.
I could sure help find somebody.
You're hired, Marty.
Marty, if you wouldn't mind just sending me an email to that effect, and then as it gets closer to January, we'll see where we're at, and if that makes sense, absolutely. Yeah.
There may be a post-panel discussion or something after the excellent.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right, Marty. I think it would be very helpful, because I think the more our customers or our counties understand where our customers are at, the better and more likely they are to move.
Absolutely.
You know, they'll listen. And knowing that you're ready and you're on board, and that hasn't always been the case, and I know now you are, and we need to sort of take that next step. So, no, I think that would be very helpful for all of us. Yep. Yep. Well, thank you. I think it's been a very helpful discussion. I appreciate everybody's participation. And anybody have anything else, or should we move to the next item on the agenda? Kay only has quarters until 2:30, so I just thought I'd tell you all. She
and I got a parking ticket the last time.
So let's go on to item number 5, which is new document types. We had a subcommittee that has been working in the last month and a half on identifying new document types that we might be able to consider for approval by the commission to add to the 63 doc names that we've got in the 11 doc type categories. And Chris is here, Basilici, who is a member of that committee. Pam Trombo and Larry Deline are the other two that could not be with us today.
But I'm actually here, Mike.
Oh, you are, Pam.
Yay.
Yeah, I've been listening silently.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad you're here. Then, well, I'm going to ask Chris to just start off, and maybe, Pam, you can chime in here, because in the last week, Pam has kind of gotten a list of the new document types to us, and we're sort of thinking at this point that we're going to post it out on the website for public comment during the next month, and hopefully we can take this up at our November meeting and add, hopefully, those, I think it was 11 if I counted them correctly, to the list of 63 that we've already had approved. But Chris, I'll turn it over to you to kind of fill in what you've all done, and Pam to fill in with Chris.
Well, I think you covered it pretty much, Mike, but, you know, it is regarding foreclosure documents. That is a big push. So we went through, Larry and Pam and I sat down, and we went through the UCB, Uniform Conveyancing Blanks, and brought them into the list now. So hopefully that will help facilitate some of these issues we've had with getting these foreclosure documents recorded maybe a bit faster. So that was our goal. And then Pam kindly took that and populated where it needed to go and is working on the schema, from what I understand. Is that right, Pam?
I think Dean, well, I'm not. Dean is working on this.
Dean has at least volunteered to work on the schema. And I hope that we've got some vendors out there when they've got it that would be willing to take a look at it and give us comment on it and let us know if there's anything we've missed on it as well. Bill, Dallin, you, I hope the Fiddler folks will be willing to do that and so forth when we get to that point. But I think we've gotten that to Dean, and when I talked to him last, he said he will get to it. They had some things going on, I know, this past week. I know he hasn't gotten to it yet, but I think he will have it with us shortly. So there are no new doc types. We're still having the 11 doc types that we've identified, but we have new document name titles that do center around, and again, I think we've tried to identify the ones that we'd heard from people namely mortgage modification, is on the list if you haven't.
Yeah, that was the one that isn't on the UCBs.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's one that we added to the grouping so that we can deal with that. And then we've got a receipt and waiver of a mechanic's lien rights, and then I think most all the rest of them center around the foreclosure apparatus here, the sheriff's certificate of sale. And the one question that I had, and you all helped me, when you've identified the new document types, you've also included in parentheses numbers. And are those UCB document numbers? Is that what those are?
Yeah.
I thought that's what they were, but and those are the new UCB numbers, not the old. I'm old enough that I remember the old ones, but it's sometimes difficult for us older people to
adapt to new numbers. Yeah, we thought it would be nice to tie them back to the Uniform Conveniencing License.
Okay. So that's what that was. That was, okay, helpful in terms of following and tracking and relating then to that. Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the work of the subcommittee, and that's, again, a lot of work that has taken place. Pam, do you have anything else you want to add?
Okay, now Jeff was talking to me, so I missed a bit of that conversation.
Well, I was complimenting you for the good job you've done again and how much we appreciate the work. And that I was just wondering if there was anything else that you had to add or would like to add on that front?
The main thing that I'd like, and this is actually submitters to look at, is in that spreadsheet, the amounts that are expected to be entered by the submitter on the deed. I just want to make sure that the submitter can calculate those amounts and just make sure that they have those amounts available so that there's not this gap where they're ready to submit a deed and they're like, okay, I can't calculate this amount. I know the sales price, but I don't know taxable amount or something like that. I just want submitters to ensure that they have that data.
Okay.
And when it gets posted, it's a yellow-colored box in the big massive spreadsheet of all the data types.
Okay. And I know those submitters have got that down pat because they've got to deal with the deed tax calculation from that. So somewhere in their file, they've got to know what that number is. I know that. But how easy it will be to transform into this, I guess, really gets to be the question for you guys to take a look at. So are your technical people to look at in that sense?
Yeah, it's just a matter of plugging in the values just to say, oh, yeah, we've got this, or is it something we have to calculate? Or I just want to make sure that it's not extra work for someone that is, you know, it's something that's right on the deed or that they can look at. That's all.
Okay.
And it's also what the county is okay with accepting.
Okay. How did you handle variations in the deed tax in the two counties, Hennepin and Ramsey, that have a statute that's different than everybody else?
You know what? Let me pull up the spreadsheet because, and maybe I'll just reiterate what it was that had to be entered. And of course, my machine's going to work as slow as anything for this. Anyone got a joke to tell in the meantime?
No, I'm without stories today. I'm sorry. But it looks like we're going to have the commission's first baby here getting soon, I think. That's what I think we've got coming. Sally, you're radiating.
Okay, it's loading.
I could ask one of my doc type questions, if that would help any to fill the gap.
Sure, go ahead, Bonnie.
Okay, I was going to make a request that subordination be added to the group or be added to the modification group, because I have I've had quite a few sets of documents that are mortgages and subordinations that are being sent to me in paper format, because they can't find the document type to send the subordination. So I've just told them to use the modification doc type, and so that resolves our issue, but it would be beneficial to have that subordination in the group if it's possible.
And that's a subordination agreement?
That's what she's ringing up as the a subordination agreement. I'm sure with all the refinancings going on, that there's all these people with home equity lines and second and third mortgages, and I'm sure at least if you're doing it with the same bank, they're probably subordinating the smaller ones to it.
Well, it's with the government home ownership. Fannie and Freddie's program. They have to subordinate the second on the new one.
Okay.
It's actually in the first round of doc types that Chris, Larry, and I went through. It's under notice.
Yeah. Second page, Mike, notice.
It's called subordination agreement.
Last one under notice.
You didn't notice it? Thank you.
Oh, there it is. Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Pam. Does that help, Bonnie?
That helps. I just to let you know, Mike, that I still have a couple more comments to make about doc types when you're ready.
Pam, are you ready?
I'm ready, but if you want to keep going with this current topic, that's fine, too.
Well, why don't we finish up what you had there, and then we'll come back to Bonnie.
Okay, so for... Well, now I got to look at where I was at. This is for modification. And this is one thing that we did change. Well, noted change. For the amount that is being sent in, we said the value of the amount exposed to deed or mortgage tax. So that would be the value of the sale price less assumed mortgage amount and personal property or value of new mortgage amount less the original amount. So we had said that the submitter has to actually say the amount that's exposed to deed or mortgage tax.
And I would hope that they know that, because that's the amount they're probably paying the deed or mortgage tax on, not the full amount again, because they've already paid it on the first time around, and the extra 50 they're financing, they've got to pay it on that then. So, but yeah, that would be good to have you all just take a look at that and make sure that's not an issue on that one. Yeah.
And just kind of plug in the values and go, oh, yeah, you know, this makes sense.
Okay. Pam, thank you for identifying that one with us then. And then maybe I'll turn it back over to Bonnie. You got question number two on doc types? Pardon me.
I do. Just something that I have not heard anybody talk about is, you know how when we get paper documents, we often get a cover letter from the attorney or the bank or whoever that sometimes has information that we need to know or that's helpful. Like maybe it says, you know, the document is a clear title deed or something. And I would like to add the doc type cover letter to be similar to a CRV, where it's not a recorded doc type, but it's Dalen refers to as a helper type doc type, and at least we can receive it and can read it and obtain that useful information. And then the other direction would be when we send documents back to a submitter, there are times when we would like to make a note to tell them something. And, you know, we recorded the document, but we noticed this, or, you know, and maybe metro counties don't do that, but, you know, us rural counties, when we are sending documents back and forth to people that we know, you know, we see on a regular basis, we have quite a rapport built up with them. And we like to send those notes back and forth. You know, we send cover letters back sometimes. And so I am having some programming done so that I can also send a cover letter back with a set of recorded documents.
And there's nothing that the commission would say or do to prohibit that in any way, shape, or form. And if you want to do that and enhancing your product in terms of what you return to the customer on that front, there's no problem at all with that.
Okay, good.
Now, in terms of submitters sending to you an electronic cover letter, I hadn't thought about that.
if they're following the protocols and the standards, I don't know that that's going to help a lot, but maybe I am missing the boat here and stuff. I see a couple of wise heads out in the audience here that want to take a crack at it. So, Chris and then Rob.
Well, I don't know how we could. I mean, could we create a field where they're allowed to put those type of notes in? You know, I would want to see another document come in. If there's going to be a notes field from the submitter with the special instructions, that's one thing. But I certainly would want to see another paper document to have to be put into the system. I think we want to keep it as simple as possible. I think that would be the best way to work around that. And maybe that's, I don't know, can we do that in this schema? That's a technical question.
Well, the problem that I see is, I mean, what is the document?
Right.
I mean, it's going to be different on every single package. There is no, could you structure something in a uniform way if you wanted to communicate? And I don't know. It would be a challenge to get that done, I think. But, Rob, you had some thoughts?
Yeah. I think one approach might be for the county to make a request to those submitting to them, whether it be a vendor or a direct submitter, to have in their application the capacity or capability to make such notes, both from the submitter as well as from the county back to the submitter. I know that Simplifile actually has in their application a comment box that is, that can be included in the submission, and it, I believe it is in the control of the county to determine whether or not that dialogue box or message box is available for the submitter to do a cover letter or not.
And their land record vendor.
And their land record vendor.
Yeah, the feature's already there, and we do view it as a feature.
So it might be something that the counties may not be able to require in conjunction with electronic recording, but can request that whoever's submitting to them make it available or see if they would be interested in doing so if they want to submit a cover letter. And correct me if I'm wrong, Dallin, but there is also the capability for the county in a limited area to put messages should there be a reject issue or something like that as well, to specify why the document is being rejected with the package. And I assume that most vendors are going to be building that capability into their product wherever they're electronically recording.
Yep.
Okay. Did I speak loud enough for you, Bonnie?
Guess not.
Pardon?
Could you hear Rob's answer and discussion here, Bonnie, at all?
Yes, I did hear Rob. I guess I don't consider a cover letter to be a document, you know, but I think I did refer to it as a doc type just because on our catcher side, a CRV is considered a doc type, but it's really kind of different because it's not treated the same as a document is. And as far as programming goes, it seemed like it was way less programming to accept another piece of paper being scanned in and submitted and caught and viewed by everybody versus having another field programmed in. And I think another field would work, too. I mean, that's kind of where I started when I first started thinking about this, that we needed some way to communicate back and forth. And we needed better communication in terms of rejects, too, because we didn't really have any way to catch any comments that the submitter might have after we rejected something. And we still kind of have an issue where, from what I understand from Dalen, all the submitters have end submitter contact fields that are completed, but we're not necessarily catching them, and so we're working to catch that data, because now, like I was saying earlier, we don't necessarily know who we're getting the documents from or who to contact if we have a question or a problem. Sometimes you just need to talk to the person that is actually submitting them, because maybe you need to have them do something differently. So I think it'll all get worked out. I hope that we can do it in some simple method and not make it too complicated.
I guess in thinking about it, I probably don't have a problem if there is a submission tool that incorporates an attachment of some sort that would be a attached letter. But I don't know that I would want the commission to get into creating a standard for that, because I think that's going to be individual vendors' decision with submitters and that type of thing. And I think the products that you've got in terms of what goes back to your customer, I know they're going to want to know the recordation information and to get the document back. And if there are comments like what you're talking about, Bonnie, and you build that into your product system, I think that's well, fine, and good. If you don't build it into the electronic one and you're going to do it in some other old-fashioned way, like a note or a slip or an email or whatever you might do, I mean, that's fine, too. But you certainly could build that into your tool that goes back to the customer if that's something that you'd wanted to deal with a vendor.
Sounds good to me.
Other questions now on doc types? Bonnie, we've exhausted your questions?
I think so. Thank you.
All right. Bill, you had...
I would just echo what I think I'm hearing you say, Mike, and Dallin as well. I think it's better to have a mechanism in the e-recording software for communicating back and forth than it is to establish another document type or other thing. We've already got that because we have to have the ability to allow the counties to give a reason why they're rejecting a document back through, and that path has already been burned in to all of our software. And whether that's a rejection comment or whether it's just a comment makes very little difference in terms of the programming requirements as compared to establishing a mechanism and a procedure for establishing another kind of paper, another document type. So I think that's what I've heard everybody say.
Yep.
I just would say yes to that.
You said it much better than I did, Bill. Thank you. No, that's really it. Yep. Any other comments, folks? Anybody? Anything else? Well, why don't we go on then to... I just want to thank again the committee for the good work they've done, and we'll have that outposted, and we'll see if we get any comments this time. As some of you might remember, comments have not been plentiful when we've done this in the past. I do remember we did get about two, if I remember right, here on the first set, so we'll see what we get this time, but... thank the committee again very much for their good work. All right, we're on down to the subcommittee reports. Trusted Submitter Subcommittee. And I'm just going to make a comment on that because Eileen and Jeff are not here. But Jeff has been working with Eileen on the revision of the Trusted Submitter Agreement. And they have exchanged some communiques on it here just this past week. And as a matter of fact, there was another one this morning when I was in a meeting and I wasn't able to open an attachment to take a look at it. But we'll have a copy of that, and when we get it, I'm going to ask Diane to send it out to board members as well as to our trusted group of people to take a look at, because we need to get something out there for trusted submitters to be able to sign up and come on. The old agreement that we had was a little bit outdated, still dealing with things from the old task force days as opposed to the commission days.
and I think Eileen has fine-tuned it here for us. And I may just go ahead and just put it out on the website even until our next meeting, and if we have to...
She had some questions on it.
Did she? Okay.
Yeah, so she didn't...
She didn't have a fine...
comments within the document itself.
Okay. Well... We'll get it out to people to take a look at, but we'll see what we can do on it. But we want to get something out as soon as we can for trusted submitters to be able to sign up with a new, more appropriate type form that talks about the commission rather than an old task force. So, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Good. County recorders. You've already heard pretty much what the recorders group was dealing with was the new document types that Chris and Pam have reported on. And I know Chris managed to sneak out, but I think she was going to talk a little bit about some of the data collection in terms of the recording information that she's also working on that we hope to have out on our website to know what recording volumes and so forth are. Clearly, the number of deeds going on in Minnesota is dropping, but we're certainly in the middle of a mini refinancing boom that's going on, and we're seeing certainly a pretty major uptick in recorded documents last month from my discussion with most of the counties, and it all seems to center around mortgages, assignments, satisfactions, and foreclosures. Unfortunately, good news on the one end and not such good news on the other end. So that seems to be what's taking place. So, Chris, I just covered your topic for you. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. Sorry.
Ben, next topic is electronic signature discussion. And because we don't have Eileen here today, I'm just going to kind of postpone that to maybe next month. Talk about, this was a question that came up here a couple of months ago from one of the counties about dealing with electronic signatures on documents and dealing with, can you mix and match? Start with paper and then include electronic, start with electronic and then revert to paper for certain aspects of things. And we did ask Bert Black for a memo on it. And why don't we include that perhaps for next month's meeting so that you can all have a chance to look at that in advance. But I think it's an interesting topic, but I don't think it's a issue that we have to deal with in terms of right now. But there were some questions that came up about that from one of the outstate counties where they wanted to take and mix electronic signatures on paper documents. And Bert has some thoughts and ideas on that. And Bob, you may even want to take a look at that and think about it a little bit, too.
The only thing I can think of is that the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws,
yes,
is working on a model law for the authentication and preservation of digital legislative documents, which addresses, through authentication, something similar. So that might be a model. Michelle Timmons is the head of the drafting committee, so she's but what that's calling for, you know, it's saying, you know, you don't deal with specifications of technology. Define your outcomes, clearly assign responsibilities and procedures, and document them. And that's how you deal with that. Yeah. So not worry about the technologies. Worry more about the process and documenting the transactions and decisions you make about them, because you go basically drive yourself crazy trying to deal with the technology as technology, because it's undoubtedly going to change.
So. Anyway, that's that topic. If I go to 8, this is a list, and the e-recording counties. We've got out, and I guess this is a topic that we wanted to discuss, the 29 that we've got, Diane?
I think it was, yeah. I'm sorry I did this agenda at the end of the last month's meeting. And now.
And what I think we were trying to get at is to get it current, mm-hmm, in terms of the counties that actually are doing e-recording.
Yeah.
We did have the 29 that had signed up in the past, but we really don't know how many of the 29 are actually doing it now. And I think that was the topic that we had. And then the doc types, all I remembered about that one, Diane, was that we were trying to make sure that the 63 doc names under the 11 doc type categories was available on our website, and I think it is.
Well, it is, but I think also Kate's probably going to remember it was to get the word out or something like along those lines, right?
Right. There's an issue that some counties would not do all the doc types. That they would only do certain doc types because of issues maybe with their AT departments, which, I mean, this is a submitter's nightmare, if you ask me, that some counties really would only want to take certain ones. So how would you do 29 counties and, you know, 10 are doing this doc type and 5 are doing only that doc type? And so I think coming from the commission, we need to make the statement that this is the standard set by the ERERC that needs to be set by all counties for the submitter's benefit.
Yeah. And the only exception that I might make to that would be the deed issue, where if counties chose not to get involved with a workaround because the standard from the commission couldn't yet be implemented, that wouldn't be a problem.
I
do think when you sign up for all of those that are authorized, and that is what you're signing up for. You don't get to just pick and choose, I'm going to do these 5 and these 5 only, because that doesn't do any good for the submitters here in that sense. And I know that some recorders and auditors and treasurers maybe don't dialogue through those as well as they should, but I think that's something that has to be there in that sense. I don't know that I've thought about that before, but and maybe we need, I don't know if we need to, do we need to discuss that? Do we need to make that a part of the standard that, you know, once you sign on, you're good for all of those that the commission has approved a standard on?
I'm going to have to, a couple things. Because you're kind of a special case, Mike, we've always known that. But I don't think we want to get hung up too much on the workaround yet. I mean, because by the time we make a decision on this, hopefully that the Department of Revenue will, something will be passed on that. So I guess what I would like to see maybe coming from the ERC is this standard statement that, you know, if you are e-recording, you need to follow these guidelines, and these guidelines include that you use these documents. The issue, again, is not so much the county side workaround because you accepted this responsibility. It's something that you're doing for your customer. Your customer is your submitter. And I think we need to instill in that in our counties. I know I have issues with my auditor treasurer's office to some degree the assessor's office, but it's something we're basically manually going to work around to get this to a level that we can, when we get more volume in, that we'll fine-tune it. So it's kind of a work in progress on that, but I would really like to see that recommendation that they do that. The counties follow these.
Dallin?
I found that when the auditor treasurers have more information, like the recorders tend to do around e-recording, that solves their concerns. Most of them are unfounded. I also don't know what forum they have, but we have auditor treasurers in the state which are willing to evangelize, if you would, the positive nature of using technology. Bob Hivala in Wright County has said he's happy to talk to any auditor treasurer's office and talk about the merits of using technology and the ACH process, etc. But I don't know what role this commission plays in that. But would underscore what Kate has just said, that if we can please do that, or have our representative from the auditor treasurer's group get more information, or also advocate for that. That would be very helpful.
Let me suggest this. Let us put this on for a future topic to be brought up. And Kay, what I'm thinking about is that perhaps that's something we need to find a way to address at that MACO conference this January, and to do it collectively with the whole group.
The whole group.
Because I think it's an important issue. Clearly, it's an important issue for, you know, our submitters. But it's also important for counties in the sense that I think when you sign up to do this, you're signing on for the whole package.
and you don't get, you know, off the hook just because I don't like working with this person in the county. he or she isn't my best friend, or they don't treat me right. Or
I don't think that's so much the case as it's they've had such trouble with ACH pulls or federal tax liens coming in and tracking down the payment mechanisms that they're very head shy about all of this. That's what I find is it's been such a headache with electronic payments from their past experiences that that's what's holding up this train. That's what I've found.
I think, again, too, on that, Chris, is that everything we do in our county is by ACH, so there's no charges, there's no escrow, there's none of that. And it has, there are issues that are difficult with the ACH because we don't do any account, we have no checkbook or no money in our office, right. So it's all done through that office. So we do lack some of the exactness of getting that payment in, as far as saying that when it comes from that office, you know exactly where it comes from, and that's with our tax lien issues. And I think, too, that once you're doing it, the benefits of doing it are just outweigh that issue, and you really do have to watch what you're coming in. Now, I could see the difficulties with a larger county that doesn't have as much, you know, ours is more memory that we know these things are coming in, and I can see some issues in a large, on a larger county of that. But to me, that's minute compared to the benefits that are from that.
Yep, and I agree.
Piece of education that might help if the AT would come in and speak to our group on that. And it probably wouldn't even hurt, you know, if there was some, Marty had suggested coming in, and I really think having the submitter people, you know, Dallin will be there, of course, Bill will be there, of course, at the conference, and so, you know, Rob, you can come in, you're right down the block too, you know what I mean? But it does help to have that other side coming in and talking to our group too. So it's not like recorders are just telling other recorders, do it this way.
And I would think that when in the Wright County guy is probably a good guy to get to talk, but I would think they have some of the same advantages on the county side that we have on the submitter side in terms of it's all electronic. It beats the heck out of handling that many individual checks. And to me, it's that simple.
Maybe that's a fear that they have too. Counties have a fear of how you set that up. I know I've had questions about how we do set up our accounts, and yes, it is, but we've done a little more work. We've set up an Excel sheet where we, you know, we itemize each of these things and stuff like that. But it also helps us internally. It helps us with state audits too, because there it's all listed out. They can never second guess these ACH accounts because it's always listed. So that might be another avenue.
This is Bonnie. I'd like to make a comment.
Yes, Bonnie.
We, in Clay County, the recorder, we have our own checking account. And we do have a magic fund account. And so what that means is the ACHs actually are submitted to U.S. Bank, and then they go to the magic fund account. And so we need to reconcile the U.S. Bank account and reconcile the magic account, in a sense. And I think that's the issue with a lot of the auditor treasurers. Is, you know, it's going from one bank to a magic fund account, and they need to reconcile. So I think everybody agrees ACHs are terrific and it's electronic and that's all good. It's just the reconciliation part to match it up. And I think the thing that we have to tell our auditor treasurers is, you know, we have to work this out slowly. This isn't something that we're going to get bombarded on. You know, in Clay County, that was kind of one of my things to try to convince them to do it is, you know, maybe we'll be lucky to have one a month for the first year, you know, and of course that wouldn't be the same for Hennepin, but, you know, just to, it, we'll slowly get used to this and slowly we'll be able to talk to the different banks and the submitters and the vendors and whoever to see if there's a way to get this little piece of information that we need. And that little piece of information that would be most helpful to us would be the document number or the transaction number or, you know, some number. And I think Simplifile, I think, has it worked out pretty well because it seems like theirs are the easiest to reconcile.
we've designed it where you can choose the format you want it in. Do you want the report to come back in Excel? Do you want the report to come back web-enabled? Do you want it as a PDF? Or do you want it compatible with your QuickBooks system, et cetera? So that's what Bonnie's referring to.
Well, I think this bears some follow-up, then. And I think that it's a good topic to put on for follow-up after our January conference with the commission, in that sense. Other thoughts, anybody? Then we're down to future meeting schedule. Thought we ought to talk about that a little bit. Again, we don't have everybody here. That's what we've kind of had a problem with the last couple of months to look out going forward. We're scheduled for still the third Thursday in the month here for November and December. We kind of, I don't think, have gone out beyond that at this point. I know that we have January. I'm just going to tell you all, we need to take care of our business in December and November because we are not going to have a January meeting. The LCC, they have this little thing called the legislature coming up, and they're going to be a little bit short-staffed for a short period of time anyway, while someone has a new little baby to the family. And there's these hearings that are going on relative to the Board of Regents for the University of Minnesota, and there are people that we rely on quite heavily that are the staff support for that and all the interviews that are going to go on. And I've kind of indicated to the LCC that we could forego having a meeting in January to accommodate what is going to be, I know, a very busy legislative schedule that they're going to be into at the beginning. I'm also concerned, just knowing that this is going to be an unusual legislative year, that we may have to have some flexibility even after January in terms of meeting times, depending on what is going on, because like most government offices, the LCC is becoming less staffed than what they were before, and my guess is, just you read the rhetoric and read the newspapers or listen to ads, if you want to listen to ads, you know that this is going to be a rather long, enduring session, and there's going to be a lot of financial issues going on, and I know that the LCC staff's going to be right in the middle of that here during the winter and the spring months, so I've kind of indicated to them that we will work with them and cooperate with them in terms of our schedule. But I thought we ought to try and at least talk about a date, a time of the month that, you know, still seems to work for people. I don't know if the third Thursday of the month is still good for people or not, but I thought we'd at least talk about that. And if there's a different time that would work better, I'm certainly open to that, if that's the wishes of the commission. But I thought at least we ought to put something on the calendar going out after the first of the year here as well, so that we get that on the website, that people can get it on their calendars and begin to schedule for the new year, whether you've got electronic or still paper calendar here going forward. Any thoughts on that, folks? Everybody's real excited about having these meetings on the third Thursday. Okay.
Third Thursday works great for me.
Does it?
It's the best time for me.
Best time for you?
Mm-hmm. The location's going to be a big problem. We're not going to be able to like here.
Well,
we totally could. I mean, it depends.
Everything's out of policy.
Yeah.
They don't meet up here. Okay.
Uh-huh. So, but, I mean, we could meet back over, you know, either perhaps at the... at the buildings that we've been at before.
And CIT.
I think parking is easier at the other buildings, or going
it
to
is.
Be,
yeah.
With the, when the legislature comes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. I think the tickets are cheaper there, too. way cheaper.
The only disadvantage
do we need to take up a collection for kids?
That my speeding tickets?
The only thing is, the conference phone is not so nice.
The reason we really came here is because the quality of the conference phone here, it's easier for people to hear and listen. You know, Bonnie, I think you and Michelle and Pam have all been able to hear a lot better what's transpiring here, and you all come through very clear on the speakerphone for all of us sitting here. So it's made it much easier, and during the winter months, it's kind of nice to have that kind of flexibility beside. But yeah. We do have that available, the MCIT building and the other pension Secretary of State building over there on Empire mm-hmm. Drive. Mm-hmm. And I guess if things are real busy legislatively, we don't have preemption rights to any room in this building, I'm told. mm-hmm. Even if we schedule it now.
Yeah, potentially we could be kicked out.
So, mm-hmm. I don't know. What are people's thoughts? I mean, do you want to continue meeting mm-hmm. here to at least put it on the calendar and see where it's at, but knowing we may have to bump to go somewhere else, and then we may have problem with phone connections there?
I personally like it here better, even though the parking is an issue because of the phone.
Right.
But if we can keep it here, and then if it gets close to the date and we know we're not going to be able to have it, we can probably pick up the MCIT mm-hmm. place relatively easily.
Is it easier for you guys to be?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a consideration.
It's what?
It's easier for them. And
it's easier for them here, and that's the only reason.
We don't have to haul all this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, that's part of the other reason to be here. But I think there's really more of a business reason for the telephone communication, which I think is the most, that to me was the most business reason for being here. I mean, if I had my druthers, I'd prefer to park over there because I don't like paying for parking, one. And two, it's always more congested here, and it's less crowded over there. But I think for what we're doing, it's more important for those that want to be able to call in to be able to hear and transact business with us. So I'm certainly comfortable in meeting here and going ahead with that. Third Thursday, okay, Bob, with you?
Yes.
I know Eileen has told me and Jeff in the past when we talked that it works as well as any meetings do. Jeff just had his boss come to town today, and I know that's why he was tied up. And Eileen had a special meeting that she got called to. She said normally her calendar works fine for this date or this time, but again, this month was not the case. Well, why don't we stick with at least the third Thursday then of the month, and let's put it on the calendar, Sally, going forward, starting in February then.
Okay.
And we'll skip January of next year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And you can at least run them tentatively out through the end of the year, and we'll just deal with months if we have to adjust accordingly going forward. Everybody okay with that? All right, let's. Any other business to come before the commission today? Hearing none, a motion to adjourn would be in order.
I'll make a motion.
Second?
It's been moved and seconded to adjourn. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you all very much.